Oh, my goodness. You know, we tried to illustrate there the minimum number of messages we get every day. Researchers would estimate that anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 different messages we get every day, all of them have an agenda to come our way. So we went on the low side, illustrated just 1,000 different ways that those things come at us. We're going to be talking today about how media, I believe, educates us, how it influences us, and at least how we ought to think about these things. And I'm just asking you to consider some things I'm going to be serving up to you today. So let's pray before we go any further. God, I'm thankful for this day, this morning, the ability that the arts have to move us, whether they're visual, audio, whatever they are. I thank you that you've created us to be sensual beings. And I'm praying now that you'd also help us to understand the things that we're hearing, what they want us to do, or what we're maybe compelled to do. So use these words, and more importantly, I pray these words are right in sync with the truth of your heart. Amen. 1,000 to 5,000 messages every single day that we get. Researchers also talk about the amount of screen time the average child has. The average child has between 6 and 10 hours of screen time every single day. Years and years ago, we used to talk about television time. We can't talk about television time any longer. Now it's screen time. Because not only do you have your TV or your plasma or your high def, but you also have your computer screen or your smartphone screen, your texting screen. I don't know exactly what the adult range is, but suffice to say, we all know we stare at screens all the time, and it's just one form of media that is influencing us. In fact, when you come into Crossroads, we are trying to influence you, and we will use any media we can, whether it's the media of lights, the media of video, or music. And I think, because I hear comments, that you're critically trying to understand what it is we're saying, whether or not you agree with it or not. I think that's great. Don't believe anything just because it's talked about here. Use your own mind to filter it, to process it. And I'm hoping that today we're going to apply those same exact rules to every message we get in every sphere of our existence. The Bible is a media. And actually, even before the printing press, Gutenberg came along, there was the media that authors who penned things in the New and Old Testaments used to use. There were things like scrolls. And even beyond scrolls, there were other media that's actually referred to in the book of Psalm 101. And it says this, verse 1, "I will sing of your love and justice. To you, O Lord, I will make music. I will ponder the way that is blameless. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk with integrity of heart within my house. I will not set before my eyes anything that is worthless." Here we have the media of music. And all different forms of music are talked about in the Bible. There's stringed instruments, there's the horn, all different kinds of media that people are using, which is great. But what's being talked about here is the strategic understanding of what I am going to allow to influence me. It says, when I'm in my house, I don't want to have anything in my house that is without worth. I don't know exactly what they're talking about. I mean, they didn't have computers back then, or they didn't have television or radio. But nonetheless, the author realizes of the influences that are coming their way and coming our way. I am not an anti-media guy. I am a pro-media guy. I love music. I love television. I love movies. I go to R-rated movies. I love things on the web. I think it's all intriguing and moving, yet at the same time, I notice that it moves me, and I want to understand, what is this thing asking me to do? Do I agree with it, and how will this affect me? One piece of media I saw this past week was from the Today Show, and actually, I never watched the Today Show, but thankfully, because of the World Wide Web that Al Gore invented, I get to watch previous things on the Today Show, and let's take a look at this. It's an utterly amazing clip. One of the things I love in it was, she basically says, "Besides the Lord's guidance, what else did you take with you?" You know, when I watch that, I'm force-fed an agenda either strategically by the Today Show or accidentally. Either way, I'm force-fed an agenda which I willingly receive. And that agenda is prayer actually makes things happen. That there actually is a God that suspends natural laws and creates a miracle. That is the only conclusion, and this is one of the numerous things that actually impacts me and influences me. It's why I love media. I just want to notice what it's doing and make decisions around it. Of course, the history of many people in churches has not been open and receptive to media. There's a long line of things that people have boycotted or not liked. You go way, way back to the king of rock and roll, Elvis himself. And the reason I believe why he was the king of rock and roll is there was this amazing, perfect storm of media colliding at once. There was the dawn of television, which enabled him to show his songs while radios were becoming connected through networks. And obviously the vinyl press was cranking out this whole perfect storm, along with a great musician who had amazing personality and that enabled him to be actually king. And many of us, of course, know that story of the first time he was on the Ed Sullivan Show and the scandal of a guy who actually is playing his guitar and actually dancing. And so, you know, they kept taking the camera and saying, get above his waist, because they didn't want to see him doing all this stuff. I mean, the guy wasn't pelvic thrusting. He was simply moving his lower legs. But they thought, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, get rid of that. And then as time went on, even seemingly more scandalous things happen, like the Beatles come along with long hair and a song that just was so crude called I Want to Hold Your Hand. And people in churches were completely up in arms with the I want to hold your hand, I want to. You guys aren't singing with Jack today, not at all. Man, last night they were singing that whole thing. But this was a thing, oh no, this is really a song that's out there. We really can't publicize that. And our media is increasing in intensity, increasing in frequency, and increasing in efficacy, its effect. Intensity, frequency, it's going on and on and on. Billboard this last week, the number one song in the nation as monitored by the number of plays on radio stations is Rihanna's song, Rude Boy. And here's some of the lyrics of this song. Come here, Rude Boy. Boy, can you get it up? Come here, rude boy, is you big enough? Take it, baby, baby, take it, love me, love me. Tonight, I'ma let you be the captain. Tonight, I'ma let you do your thing. Yeah, tonight, I'ma let you be a rider. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, babe. Tonight, I'ma let it be fire. Tonight, I'ma let you take me higher. Tonight, baby, we could get it on. Yeah, we could get it on. Very disturbing. Where has grammar gone in our society? I don't know. Look at this. What is this? Is you big enough? What do you mean, is you big enough? Are you big enough? How can we not? No, we are leaving children behind. No child left behind. We're leaving them behind. Well, where's this word, ama? Ama. 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 I thought that was a pancake syrup or something like that. Well, what is this? This is an example, and this is again the number one song on all of our radios. Number one song, might not have thought twice about what the messaging is and with things that were being force-fed. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree with this song. I'm saying that we ought to consider the messages that we are getting and an example of the frequency and the intensity of these messages is skyrocketing. Maybe familiar with the old scientific experiment of a frog that's dropped into a boiling cauldron of water will immediately and obviously jump out. But if he's put into cold water and the flame is slowly turned up, the frog won't notice the change in temperature and will die, boil to death. Of course, the question is, why didn't they try this with a cat initially? Why would you do this like with a frog? Don't understand that. I was supposed to be funny. I'm sorry. Again, you don't have to agree with everything I say. Just think about it critically. That's fine. But just like this, can any of us deny really that there is an ever-increasing heat and pressure in the intensity and the frequency of certain messages that are coming our way because they're trying to influence us? And of course, all of us understand advertising. All of us understand that those are messages that are trying to influence us, but yet we think that the messages that we get from our entertainment itself, in between which the advertisements lie, that those things don't affect us, that those messages aren't really altering our behavior, aren't altering our mindset. And I just, like to consider a different possibility today. Michael McLuhan, Marshall McLuhan of the Media Is the Message fame, says this: anyone who tries to make a distinction between education and entertainment doesn't know the first thing about either. What's Sesame Street? Is Sesame Street education or Sesame Street entertainment? Of course, it is powerful education because it entertains you while it, and anything that we are entertained by or drawn into a story, we will therefore be more warm and susceptible to the storylines and the undercurrent teaching themes that are making that a powerful story. Marketing and branding went to a new level when it was articulated a number of years ago in the book Love Marks, that great brands aren't just going to be brands that you can identify by the color scheme or by the textures or by the lifestyle that they're promoting, but great brands now have to make an emotional impression on you where you become emotionally bonded to the thing, where you feel like this product is an expression of your personality or of your personhood. It's basically a love mark that you have on your psyche. And inside of this book, they quote a neurologist, and he says this: the essential difference between emotion and reason is that emotion leads to action, while reason leads to conclusions. Our entertainment is all designed to cause an emotional reaction. If it doesn't cause an emotional reaction, then we aren't going to expose ourselves to it. That's why the Encyclopedia Britannica is no longer. It doesn't evoke anything inside of us. That's what stories do. And if you're a salesman, if you're a great salesman, whatever you sell, you know that people buy on emotion and justify with fact. We see something we want, say a car, like I've been looking at cars recently, used cars, I've been thinking about them, and I find one that I like, it looks cool, boom, I'm like, oh, I like this car, I like the price, and then I got to go to the internet and I have to find facts that support what I want. So I need the facts to show that it's a reliability of 8.0 at least. But we buy on emotion and we justify with fact. And that's what all great stories, whether in television or music or movies, are constantly trying to give us an idea of a storyline that affects us, which our psyche, our brain, does not differentiate between a marketing message and a story that still is bringing a message and a way of life to us. The book of Luke, chapter 11, verse 33 and following. Jesus certainly knew nothing of love marks, but he understand this way that human beings are created. And he says this: the eye is the lamp of your body. When your eye is healthy, your whole body is full of light, but when it's bad, your body is full of darkness. Therefore, be careful lest the light in you be darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, it will be wholly bright as when a lamp gives its rays and gives light. What this is saying is people who light up your life, you light up my life, people who emote a blessing, a countenance of blessing to people, are able to do it because something inside of them is going right, and something inside them that's going right, Jesus says, is in part tuned to the right things you're looking at. What you look at determines who you are, it influences you, that force feeding, and that influences how you can bless other people. If we're looking at something that's dark, or we have a dark eye or a dark ear, it influences who we are, and that then influences how we can positively or negatively influence other people. When I started to notice this, and I'm going to try really hard not to tell you anything that you should or shouldn't watch. That's not my objective today. My objective is just to get us thinking about the agendas that are either intended by the writers or accidental by the writers, and notice those and ask ourselves whether or not we agree with them. One of the reasons why I'm not a fan and I don't watch generally Spike TV, and you would think, gosh, that should be right down Brian Tome's alley. I kind of think of myself as a guy's guy. I have classic guy characteristics, positive and negative, as a part of me. And then I realized Spike TV is constantly playing to the stereotypical worst part of masculinity so frequently. Violence is the way to settle your disputes. Violence, strength, shows how strong you are and how great you are. And actually, there's the consistent objectification of women. Women are objects. Sexual things to look at and to do other things with, that's all they are. I mean, how many women can we have on trampolines on Spike TV? I just realized this is something that's being force-fed to me, a way to view, and it does. It does affect how men view women if that's what we're constantly taking in. And when I see that agenda, I say, that's not the kind of way I want to view other women. And on the other side of the equation, just my humble opinion as an example, fodder, Lifetime. The network that hates men. I mean, is there not a network for women, network that hates men? I mean, every storyline that I see on that is about how your man will screw you over. And you don't know it right now, but you're about to find out that there's body parts in the back of his car. Previous marriages, don't trust men, they are evil. When we start to notice things and see things, we can ask ourselves, do I agree with this agenda? Do I want to foster this agenda inside of me? Do I want to be conformed to this? And this is the pattern of our world. Objectify women as sex objects and be paranoid that men are going to overpower and abuse you. This is the pattern of our world. And there's numerous patterns. In the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 2, it says this. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For me, I want to know what is good, acceptable, and perfect. I want to live in that area. And to do that, I must test things. I must evaluate things. And I must renew my mind so that my mind isn't constantly being conformed and molded by the ways of this world. And it is consistently all the time. There is an agenda trying to mold me. Never was this more clearly seen than in recent media when I read on the Wall Street Journal a story about how NBC is strategically changing content and some of its shows to alter behavior. And here's what it says in the Wall Street Journal. It says, the tactic, General Electric Company's NBC Universal calls it behavior placement, is designed to sway viewers to adopt actions they see modeled in their favorite shows, and it helps sell ads to marketers who want to associate their brands with a feel-good, socially aware show. And the examples they give are how NBC and its writers are strategically writing into the script Tina Fey's character, recycling, or a secondary character in Law and Order going through the house and changing the light bulbs to high-efficiency light bulbs. And they're strategically putting this in because they found and they believe that this will influence behavior. And actually, I'm glad they do. These are two behaviors I love and applaud. I think it's awesome. Great recycling, great high-efficiency light bulbs. I think that's smart. I think it's awesome. And they goes on and says this. This is the power of persuasion that NBC Universal hopes to tap. And then an executive they quote says this. Subtle messaging woven into shows mainstreams it. And mainstreaming is an effective way to get a message across. Is there any difference in subtly messaging recycling and high-efficiency light bulbs and subtly messaging sexual behavior, subtly messaging the things that you should have in your house, subtly messaging the kind of humor? I just go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And if we know that storylines affect those things, why is it so hard for us to believe that if I have a constant diet of variety story plots that it won't affect me? The greatest writing and storytelling and influence is in the show, in the music, in the movie itself. It does. All research shows that this does influence, and network executives plan things accordingly, and in many ways I'm thankful for it. Now, I think that there are strategic agendas that just I disagree with, and I think it's an awful thing to have a strategic agenda against a specific media. I also believe that most people in media do not have strategic agendas to force feed a specific value, but nonetheless, it is happening. It is accidentally happening. And so what I'm going to encourage all of us do this week is have a media feast. I want you to feast yourself on media. I want you to get your media on. You got to love when a preacher says that. Go media yourself to death. Gorge yourself. Or at least do the same amount of media you normally do. Do the same numbers of text messages. Go to the same websites. The same songs. Go to the movies you watch. The television shows. I want to encourage you to go and just experience media. But I want you to ask yourself the question, What is it that this thing is trying to communicate? Either the intended communication point or the subtle unintended communication point. What is the agenda that's being force-fed me? And just to prime the pump, because I've been doing this for years, seeing this for years, as I've been noticing these things, just four examples for you to think through. There's hundreds that hopefully you'll notice, but just four to kind of pique your curiosity and take us further on discussion. One thing you'll see is the urgency of fear. There's the agenda of the urgency of fear. I remember when I was younger, if you wanted news, you had the newspaper, which is just about impossible to have that any longer. That's about dead. You could have the newspaper, or you could have the 6 o'clock news for a half an hour. And then after that, if you wanted national news with Dan Rather, Walter Cronkite, he was way before my time, but you could have that. And that was your news options. And then there was the noontime news at 12 o'clock. And then there was the morning news, Good Morning America, Today Show, which were sort of news shows with slice of entertainment, a little molding of the both of them. And then there was constant 24/7 news radio in Pittsburgh, KQV radio. And then there was CNN, 24/7 television news. And of course, MSNBC comes along. And now we have websites that are about this all the time. And can I just ask us to consider this? Is there any more news today than there was 30 years ago? Is there really any, I mean, there's things happening, but is there anything newsworthy that can actually affect your life that you need that much news? The more news you have, the more advertisers you have to sponsor it. And if advertisers are going to be on a news show, you need viewers. And so how do you get viewers to get advertisers to pay you for your content? One of the greatest ways to do is prey on fear. You must watch because you could die if you don't. You must watch because there's a little virus happening all the way over in some little island that could get you. You must watch because this could really hurt. 12 minutes of local news, I'm told, is weather. Come on, I don't need 12 minutes of weather. I need a picture of a sun or a cloud and a number. That's all I need. Let me see a thing. Okay, got it. I know, yeah, good. I don't need 12 minutes of like Doppler radar, clouds, look out, go to Kroger and buy batteries because you will be holed up for a month inside of your house. Oh no, you know. You'll just see in various ways. One of the themes, the agendas, is the urgency of fear. Another one that you may notice this week is the validation of the masses. The masses validate whether or not it's a good idea. The masses validate whether or not it's good or bad. Not you. Not your own heart, not God, but the masses. A couple weeks ago, I talked about Joshua Bell during the Easter service and the experiment that they did when they took this guy who's a world-renowned violinist and stuck him in the hallway of transit, the Metro Transit in Washington, D.C., and dressed like a normal Joe with his case open, playing his $3.5 million violin handcrafted by Stradivarius. And of course, you know, 0.0% of people noticed him. And actually, what I didn't tell you before was that the Washington Post was trying to strategically do a test and figure out, could people recognize genius apart from hype and platform? If somebody isn't hyped or advertised and doesn't have a massive platform, could the average person recognize genius? And the very obvious conclusion was no. People cannot recognize genius unless the masses validate it, unless there's a television show about the person, unless they have a massive stage, unless they have a Facebook page with 3,000 friends. Unless this is happening, it's not valid. It isn't real. There are people in your life that are geniuses. There are people in your life who are world changers. There are people in your life who the masses will never validate, but yet they hit the same nail every day. And they are building up an inheritance. So at the end of 20, 30 years, they go to their grave having affected an entire family, an entire generation. But yet our culture force feeds us to say, unless the masses, unless everybody knows about it, it's not greatness, it's not genius. Another agenda that you'll see is the dream of popularity. The dream of popularity that unless I'm popular, then I haven't succeeded in life. one of the shows that I like that I watch. I watch a couple somewhat frequently. One is American Idol. And it was real cool to watch American Idol a number of years ago. Now it's kind of on the downward swing. I'm sort of uncool. But that's okay. I still dig American Idol, so I watch American Idol. And one of the things that does bother me about the show is it bothers me when I see a 16-year-old say, "It's always been my dream. And I've worked so hard. I've worked so hard." And I'm sitting there thinking, you've worked hard. You've sung in the shower for 16 years, and now you're having all of your expenses paid to Hollywood. It's not your dream. You're drawn to the popularity, the dream of popularity. I constantly wonder, if you could have 50,000 people cheering for you while working at Jiffy Lube, would your dream to be to change oil? Our dreams so often are to be popular. That's the dream. Go to Joseph Beth or scroll through Kindle, whatever you are in terms of book reading. Notice how many books there are on leadership. Leadership, being the guy, making things happen, being known. How many books are there on followership? Who wants to buy a book on being a follower? Oh my goodness. I mean, talk about a loser life. No, that's not the dream. That's not what our society validates or values, unless it's being force-fed. Then unless everybody knows you, unless you are the one making something happen, unless you are the leader, you're just not living up to your potential. Another one. This last one I'll just mention. Actually, I won't mention it. Let's take a look at really what is the seminal scene of a popular television show, and it's the kind of stuff that happens very regularly in the show. Let's take a look at this. This is a very common theme, and it's what I would call the accident of happiness. I'm really not trying to be funny, but the accident of happiness, you see this regularly. It just happened. I feel good, and it just happens. He says, "Do you think I want to look at you? I don't want to cheat on my wife. I don't want to, but it just happens. I can't help it. And when we get a steady diet of this, we don't have modeled or inspired for us an alternative way of living. It's being force-fed that sex happens. Resistance is futile. It's futile. You can't save yourself. You can't say no to sexual temptation. It just happens. And to say that this doesn't affect us is to contradict and throw out every shred of scientific research that happens about how the brain and how the emotions function and how NBC is doing its programming, as in Wall Street Journal talks about. And I'm not saying you shouldn't watch Grey's Anatomy or any show. I'm saying that you should be asking yourself, does this force feed me a way of living my life? Is this going to get me in the place where I'll have a life of worth according to my standards? Whatever your standards are, these things do affect us. So as we do our media feast this week, just, you know, doing all of your media, I want to ask some questions. I actually put this in your program. And so let's just talk about these for a moment. Here's what I'd like you to ask yourself, or have these things running through your mind while you're exposed to text messages or blogs or whatever it is. And here it is. How does this make me feel, really? How do I feel when I experience this? You are feeling something, or else you wouldn't regularly go back to this. Maybe you're feeling vengeful, or you're feeling intellectually superior, or whatever it is. How is this thing making me feel? Two, what thoughts, views is the media trying to introduce or reinforce in me right now? Do I agree with them? Maybe I'll still watch it or not, but at least let me know. Experience, what is the agenda that either intentionally or accidentally is coming my way? And do I agree with this agenda that I'm subjecting myself to? Three, does the media entertain me because it inspires the best in me, or because it inspires the worst in me? It does inspire me. Media does inspire me. That's why I want to expose myself to a media. Remember being in high school, go to Rocky 1. That was back in the days of Rocky 1, 3, 4, whatever they were, or Rambo. It inspired me to get in a fight. Every time I walked out of that theater, I'm like, come on, who's there? It just inspires, you know, vengeance, inspires dominance. And all media that's great that you like is inspiring you to be something. Is that the thing, the person that you want to be in your spiritually sane moments? saw something a couple weeks ago while I was watching the other show I watched Lost. If you haven't watched Lost, don't try. No way you'll catch up right now. I think there's six shows left. It's one of the two shows I watch. I enjoy it very, very much. And I saw something a couple weeks ago that inspired me and tapped into, and I noticed it. As you train yourself, you'll notice these things immediately. And I'll show you this clip, but let me tell you what's happening. First of all, there's a guy who's the classic slimy character. His name is Ben. Ben is the manipulative one, the conniving one. He always has an agenda. He intentionally hurts people, or by his passivity, he even allows his daughter to be killed. He is just the worst guy. He's really just a jerk in the whole thing. On two sides of the equation, there is the side of good, which is represented by a figure named Jacob. And on the side of Jacob and good is a bunch of people that are represented and aligned on the side of good. And you're going to see a woman that's aligned herself with the side of good, the side of Jacob, who's going to be chasing Ben through the woods, the little slimy guy. On the other side is a guy who represents evil, and other people are aligned with him. His name is Locke. And so let's take a look at this. Every time I see it, I've seen it, I think, six times now. Why is it? It is the agenda being force-fed of forgiveness. And I felt like that guy many times before. You come to this place where you say, man, I've screwed up so bad. I've done such a stupid thing. I've dishonored God. I've dishonored others. I may as well just cash it all in and just forget trying to please God or do the right thing. I'm going to go the other way. Because no one will have me. Certainly God won't have me. And yet God says, I will have you. I'll have you. That woman says, I'll have you. That is a beautiful thing that I want more of in my life. God, you are the creator of all beauty. All beauty in creation and all beauty in character. I thank you for your power to create. I thank you for your power to forgive. And I thank you that you've made us emotive beings that we can feel. Help us to feel this entire week. Why don't we stand and let's just sing this together.